Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
And good evening, everyone. Welcome to another Tuesday night installment here at Your Remedies in the Law. Tonight, of course, we're discussing various IRS administrative remedies with our speaker, Mr. Tony Davis. My name is Martin Michaels. I'll be your host for this evening's conference brought to you by Your Remedies in the Law, which is in direct affiliation with Americans Restoring America. Before we get started with this evening, though, it is very important that I provide you with the following disclaimer. Nothing that you hear on this call tonight may be deemed by you in any way, shape, or form to be legal advice. If you are on this call because of a situation in your life where you require legal advice, I very politely ask you to hang up the phone. Now, we don't mean to sound rude when we say this. We just want to express to everyone in no uncertain terms that anyone joining this call looking for legal advice has no place or business here. Nobody here at Your Remedies in the Law or any of the programs offered by Americans Restoring America is a lawyer, attorney, or any member of the bar. Therefore, no one here is able to offer you any legal advice. Should you require legal advice, my advice to you would be get an attorney. As for these calls, they're all just for entertainment purposes. It's just folks saying what they might do where they're similarly situated to you. You might get a little bit of education out of it, but mainly you're just going to get folks' opinions about what they might do. However educated and experienced these thoughts and opinions might be, they are just people's opinions nonetheless, and it's always up to you to do your own due diligence. All right, on to the next subject. I'd like to go over a few things here with Your Remedies in the Law, if I could, very quickly. First of all, if I can take everybody to the homepage of www.yourremediesinthelaw.com, if we look up in the upper right-hand corner, we see a little picture of the Constitution. Click on that, and you'll have a separate page come up with just two items on it. These two items are of much importance, though, especially if this is all new to you. First and most importantly on the left is the jurisdictionary course. This is your 24-hour crash course on the rules of civil procedure. Better known to some as American jurisprudence or ANJUR, the rules of civil procedure are essentially the foundation or structure upon which all law in America rests. So to have a firm and thorough understanding of these rules means to have at least a basic understanding of what's going on in virtually any court scenario that you find yourself in. On the right is the common law default process, mostly known for its high national win rate in most traffic cases throughout the country. At least that's what it's most popularly acquired for. But that is not really why it's on this page. The reason that we have it up here with the jurisdictionary course is when you go through it, you'll notice that it utilizes a lot of the same fundamental procedures that you learned about in the jurisdictionary course, so it kind of acts as a real-life homework assignment. Also, for a lot of folks, it's their first time committing to action. Folks seem a little more willing to take that first step, probably because of such a high success rate and traffic scenarios being such a common interest in this country today. The common law default, although known majorly for traffic purposes, has many other. Truly, it's for most scenarios that you may find yourself in where there's no damage to property or person. It's just some entity is claiming you broke a rule, therefore you must pay a civil penalty. Both of these items are very affordably priced, the jurisdictionary with a contribution of $250 and the common law default at $150. Also on the subject of Your Remedies in the Law, most of you are probably familiar now with Americans Restoring America. Every time you visit the homepage of yourremediesinthelaw.com, you are met with that blue box that pops up asking if you'd like to continue on to the site that you were visiting or stay and visit Americans Restoring America. The reason that we've done this is very simple. We're trying to get folks to explore. There are multiple information providers talking about multiple subjects, as well as many other features and study groups at Your Remedies in the Law. And Your Remedies in the Law is just one of a couple dozen websites that all together make up Americans Restoring America. So there's quite a bit for you to see, and we hope that you'll do just that at your leisure. If you have any questions about whether or not we have an information provider that could give you their personal educated opinion about your particular situation, get a hold of us at yourremediesinthelaw.com, and we'll be happy to assist you in any way that we can. Statewide communications. If you're not already a member, please do sign up. Tell your friends and family about it. That's that map of the United States that you see on virtually every site that we have. It's a private communications platform that enables folks to speak with one another on a local level based on a very strict pre-decided topics of discussion. So essentially how it works is this. A wizard will walk you through a very easy setup. You know, put your name in here, click next. Put your zip code in here, click next, that sort of thing. Then it will walk you through the remainder of the setup. And then you get to a point where it will ask you, what are your hot points interested in? This could range anything from credit card issues, home foreclosure, IRS matters, asset protection, or maybe veterans' rights, maybe personal health rights, anything that you can think of. And if it affects your personal rights, you should find it in that list or something that's close enough. When the setup is complete, it puts it all together, much of what you think of a social network. Though nothing like a social network. It's very custom. It's very private. But it then puts you in contact with people in your local area that have similar interests to you. The idea here is to put the power of education and communication back in the hands of the common man. If you are in need of legal advice or you need someone to represent you, you're going to have to get an attorney. It's just that simple. But if there was a way, a private place that you could go to discuss matters, your personal opinions, their personal opinions, with people that were like-minded, maybe you jump online one day and you say, this happened to me today. First person comes back and says, well, I disagree with that. I don't think that they should be able to do that. I don't think that's fair. Well, that's probably not going to be of a tremendous amount of help to you. Maybe the next person comes on and says, well, I'll tell you what I would do were I similarly situated. I'd watch these YouTube videos, and then I'd go down there to my local county courthouse, go to the law library, get a law dictionary, and look up these terms. Maybe the next person after that says, those all sound like great ideas. I'd also go to this particular website and check out these educational materials that might assist you in your learning. And then for you to go and do some due diligence on what you're reading, just people's suggestions, people's opinions at all. But if you did some due diligence and educated yourself, maybe the farther you got into it, you discovered that it's not as difficult as you initially thought it would be because you're focused on one single subject. And you get to the point where you've educated yourself, and now you're handling your own affairs, your own matters. Well, folks, there's nothing illegal or unlawful about that. And that's all we're trying to do here at Statewide Communications is just very simply get people to start talking again. Of course, there's no cost to you for using Statewide Communications, either signing up or the regular using of it. And so we hope that you'll pass that around. Freedoms Radio. If you're over the road, you don't want to deal with the call process, maybe you're just new to your remedies in the law, and you don't yet have your username and password, therefore you can't see the phone number and the PIN. By the way, if you'd like to pick up a membership to your remedies in the law, it's very easy. You just simply click the register button. Fill out your basic information there. You'll enjoy the first 30 days for free to evaluate it. After that, it converts to a very affordable $10 a month on your credit card or your PayPal. But every single call is recorded. You have years of archives to go through, a vast wealth of knowledge, as well as many other wonderful features. But if that's not an option for you today, you have freedomsradio.com. Every night, the calls go out over the air at 9 p.m. Eastern live. There's also the question bar there where you can type in a question, click submit. As long as that's during call hours, that will pop up on the moderator screen, and we do our best to read every single one of those questions out over the air, so long as they are appropriate. So you'll get them one-on-one with the information provider like you would be by being a private member, but you do get your questions answered. And there's no cost to utilize Freedoms Radio, so no matter where you are or your circumstances, you never have to miss a call again if you don't wish. All right, winding down here, I'd like to go over one last bit of housekeeping. This is your caveat emptor, or your buyer beware. For any purchase that you may make at your remedies in the law or any of the other sites underneath the umbrella of Americans Restoring America, when you come aboard and you go with an information provider, you are doing just that. Information providers pay Mr. Edward for advertising at your remedies in the law. This payment would be an expense to that information provider along with any other expenses that they might have associated with your particular product or service. When you contact us, all we simply do is listen to your particular scenario, quickly deduce from a list of folks that honestly most of you would probably never be able to find on your own just simply because they can't be found. Can we make those introductions? Not every part on the information provider is always going to be successful. everybody always hopes for the best. We plan for the best, and believe you me, we aim for the best. But unavoidable things do sometimes happen, and when they do, you have to roll with them and deal with them as you would with anything else in life. But can we also want to emphasize, though, that the intent is always to be successful. If you have any questions of that, we welcome you to visit www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com/testimonials and see what others have to say about these products and services. Now, let's touch very quickly on the subject of refunds or the refund policy. There is none. Not if your remedy is in the law, anyway. Of course, when you call board and you go with a particular information provider, again, that is exactly what you're doing. So any discussion of a refund or a credit would be a strict and private matter between you and the information provider, and even then, that's very few and far between. It must be extenuating circumstances. You are expected to have done your due diligence before you commit to any particular process or information provider's time. All right, lastly, pertaining here to all of the information providers at Your Remedy is in the Law, we'd like you to remind everybody that all of our speakers at these conferences are our guests and should be treated with the highest level of respect. If you disagree with something that a speaker has to say, that's fine. Disagreeing is how we learn, but please, you must always be civil. Besides, if a question is posed properly and then answered properly, then we can all learn something from it.
Well, Mark, thank you for that disclaimer and sharing with us these other bits of important information. Michael Lindberg here. I was asked a question this afternoon, and it was, how is it that I can say, quote, to tenderize the court into good behavior? How is that possible when you have a judge that just totally ignores what you're saying and what you're doing and just prattles on and just walks on top of you, walks over you? Well, in the first place, if you're going forward pro per without an attorney, the likelihood is that unless you are well-versed in the rules of civil procedure, the rules of evidence, you probably made several fatal mistakes, which the primary one that PJ talks about on this call is never make assertions. Never assert anything. Never tell them what you know. Never tell them who you are. Simply invoke the rules of evidence. They're the ones that asserted when that blue light went on or when somebody knocked on your door with a presentment for your arrest after a grand jury indicted you. They're the ones that asserted that you're a certain class of citizen, a certain class of United States citizen, and they're also the ones that asserted that your activity was on a particular land. There's only two lands that we can discuss here, south of Canada and north of Mexico. It's land of the, quote, freely associated compact states, end quote, or it's federal land. It's one of the two. Citizenship is fully divulged in the 1901 Bidwell decision and the 1945 Hoover decision. You're either part of the co-sovereignty that formed this nation, you're a citizen of one of the several states, freely associated compact states, or you're a federal citizen. It's one of the three. Anything else? But it's their assertion. You don't tell them anything. So I did a little research, and in fact I shared this with PJ earlier today. I don't know if he's had a chance to see it. We'll find out. But I'm going to give you some quotes from different court cases. I don't like to ever share with you my thoughts on this or that because, frankly, my thoughts are frivolous in extent to what do the courts say. Because what the courts say is what convicts you or what makes you innocent. Okay? So here's some court cases that I want you to think about. PJ's listening, and I hope that he'll comment on them when we turn the call over to him in just a moment or two. Quote, acts in excess of judicial authority constitutes misconduct, particularly where a judge deliberately disregards the requirements of fairness and due process. This is Cannon versus Commission on Judicial Qualifications. It's a 1975 decision, 14 California, 3rd, 678-694. Then there's Gonzalez versus Commission on Judicial Performance. This is a 1983 case, again, 33 California, 3rd, 359, 371, and 374. So that's what that case is. Another one, Cooper versus Aaron, 358 U.S. 1. Any judge who does not comply with his oath to the Constitution of the United States wars against the Constitution and engages in acts in violation of the supreme law of the land. The judge is engaged in acts of treason. End quote. In U.S. versus Will, regarding Sawyer, quote, no state legislator or executive or judicial officer can war against the Constitution without violating his undertaking to support it, end quote. This is an older one, 1821, as well as 1980. You got Cohen's versus Virginia, that was 1821. What I just quoted you came from U.S. versus Will. That's a 1980 decision. Cooper versus O'Connor. There's a general rule that a ministerial officer who acts wrongfully, although in good faith, is nevertheless liable in a civil action and cannot claim the immunity of the sovereign. Well, that's interesting. Davis versus Burris. A judge must be acting within his jurisdiction as to subject matter and person to be entitled to immunity for civil action for his offense. All right. Subject matter jurisdiction, personam jurisdiction is what this is talking about. Remember, I said there are three classes of United States citizenship by the Hooven decision of 1945 and Bidwell. So if he doesn't force the state, the prosecutor, to evidence upon the record, then he's acting, he's not entitled to immunity. In Forrester versus White, constitutionally and in fact of law and judicial rulings, state and federal magistrates or judges or any government actor, state or federal, may now be held liable if they violate any citizen's constitutional rights, privileges, or immunities or guarantees, including statutory civil rights. Now, that's interesting, including statutory. They're mentioning constitutional rights, and now they're mentioning statutory civil rights. That's interesting. A judge is not immune for tortuous acts committed in a purely administrative, non-judicial capacity. Boy, if that doesn't strike a dagger to the heart of judges who misbehave. What else we got here? Oh, Pulliam versus Allen. In 1996, Congress passed a law to overcome this ruling, which stated that judicial immunity doesn't exist. Citizens can sue judges for prospective injunctive relief. Quote, our own experience is fully consistent with the common law's rejection of a rule of judicial immunity. We never had a rule of absolute judicial immunity. At least seven circuits have indicated affirmatively that there is no immunity to prevent irreparable injury to a citizen's constitutional rights, end quote. Subsequent interpretation of the Civil Rights Act by this court acknowledged Congress's intent to reach unconstitutional actions by all the state and federal actors, including judges. The 14th Amendment prohibits a state from denying any person within its jurisdiction the equal protection under the law, since a state acts only by its legislative, executive, or judicial authorities, the constitutional provisions must be addressed to those authorities, including state and federal judges. We conclude that judicial immunity is not a bar to relief against a judicial officer acting in her judicial capacity. The United States Supreme Court stated, quote, when a state officer acts under a state law in a manner violative of the federal constitution, he comes into conflict with the superior authority of that constitution, and he is in that case stripped of his official or representative character and is subjected in his person to the consequences of his individual conduct. The state has no power to impart to him any immunity from responsibility to the supreme authority of the United States. This is Schuer versus Rhodes. And then lastly, this is the last one, promise. Zeller versus Rankin. When a judge knows that he lacks jurisdiction or acts in the face of clearly valid statutes expressly depriving him of jurisdiction, judicial immunity is lost. Isn't that sweet? So, with that having been said, let's hear what PJ has to say about this and more. Go ahead, brother.
Yeah, thank you. Can you hear me good?
Hear you perfectly well. Thank you.
Okay. I've got the phone laying on my chest and laying on my back. Where do you get all these gems of those cases? Those are wonderful. I've been in law for a long time, and those are some really good ones.
I already sent them to you and John earlier today.
We'll have to get a Dropbox page for you to put all your gems together in one bucket there, and then because they're good ones. You have a lot more than that, too. I mean, over the years, you've brought up some good ones. The this is timely, too. Michael's aware of it, that we have two cases going against the IRS, where the three cases going, just off the top of my head, where the IRS comes in and prosecutes somebody, but they fail to put on the record, even though it was challenged several times during the proceeding, several times after the proceeding, several times during the appeal, several times during the post-appeal, several times in one case during the civil action against them for failing to complete the record. And the question was, is there an IRS agent that will testify that Bill had a legal duty to fill out any form for the United States or the IRS? Just that simple. I mean, you said he didn't file. We'll admit he didn't file. We'll admit he filed, 8 years ago, and then he quit because he's been asking you ever since. If he has a legal duty to file, then you guys refuse to answer him, and then 7 years later you drag him into court. They do that 7 years later because they think they got their time is barred at 8 years. So you think you're getting away with something sometimes, and then all of a sudden on the eighth year they come after you. But anyway, they refuse to – now think about this. They refuse to tell you if you have a legal duty to file. Now, why would they refuse? You are the – in society situation in relationship to them. You're the boss. You're the one giving them permission to operate. You're the one that delegated limited authority to them. Constitutionally, and they refuse to turn back to the creator of their own jobs, their own temporary employment, and tell the employer if he has a duty to file. I mean, how in the world can they justify such action? And yet these federal judges are trying to get away with this. So we've actually had some retired judges, some of them are federal, some of them are high-level district in state courts, get together and retired. Some of them passed away by now. They've been working on this for many years. And they have seen incrementally how these courts are entrapping people into Basically, they're keeping evidence out of the record so that the United States can prevail. The United States can press on with a statism agenda. So what we're doing is we're filing criminal charges. We can't file criminal charges. Well, we can. We file a request for grand jury investigation. That's really what you do. So we're asking a large number of people. I can't remember how many are on there, 24, something like that, to take a look at our document, take a look at the evidence that we're presenting, and make a decision if there's enough there to initiate a criminal prosecution where you drag that individual, may it be a sheriff or a federal judge or a state judge or a sheriff or whatever, in front of a jury and get him to tell the jury, explain to the jury his why he did what he did or why he did why he didn't do something. Why he didn't, in these IRS cases, you know, why did you have all this opportunity during the trial to turn to the IRS agent and tell the agent to answer that question? Why didn't you do that? And the jury's going to sit there, you know, why didn't you do that? The guy's asking him, you know, do I have a legal duty to file? And you're saying that he doesn't have to answer that question? Or is somebody insane here? It's going to be very interesting because we this happens in court time and time again. They slip evidence into the record that you don't know is damaging to you. They use words that you don't know is that they're relying upon to get a legal nexus to make it appear that you have a legal duty to file or pay any taxes over to the United States. Let's just say, just hypothetically, they ask somebody in the witness stand, did this activity occur in Webster County in the state of Missouri? And they go, yes. And you're sitting there as the defendant, and you go, yeah, it occurred in Webster County in Missouri. Okay, that's good. But they didn't tell you that the word county in statutes at large, which operates in the United States courts, that's their language, that's the definition of their words, county means a federal possession. So they just got on the record in front of the judge that your activity occurred in government land. If your activity occurred in government land, the U.S. court has jurisdiction and the United States written law applies. And guess what? You've got to pay a tax for your activity there. Now, the truth is, it's a lie. That land is not of the United States. It's without the United States. About 25% of American land is of the United States. The rest is without the United States. Of the United States is subject to congressional and all legislative written laws. Of the independent states and United States Congress, and of course, under the Constitution. The rest of the land is under the general jurisdiction of our country, which is called common law. And they don't want common law to be even talked about. Most lawyers get out of law school nowadays. They've only had like 2 days of discussion on the Constitution, and maybe 2 hours on common law. And they systematically have worked it out of our society. Even though the Bill of Rights says the common law isn't going to disappear, it's still there as strong as ever, but they don't want you to know that. Now, as far as the judge's criminal activity, if you are in a court, and they're trying to prosecute you to take your property and to take your freedom, which is your property also, take your money and your freedom without law, is that wrong or is that a crime? Sometimes it's wrong if they don't know. But if they know it's a crime, if they know it's a violation of written law, then it's a crime. And that's what these guys are terrified about, getting in front of a true informed jury. So, Michael, a lot of these cases that you present there will be presented in some of these cases of going after these judges because people can listen to the simplistic language of those that evidence of law that you read off, and then they can turn, the jury can turn and look at the judge and say, you know, didn't you know about this? I mean, you're a judge. Didn't you know that you had no right to violate this man's rights? You had no right to steal his land from him, his freedom from him, his money from him. Just because you use a court doesn't mean it's not a crime. Some of the greatest crimes in the nation occur in United States courts. Most American land is not taxable as a matter of law. All of that is, almost all of it, if full disclosure was given, people would say, no, I'm going to keep my tax money and I'm going to send my kids to private school. I'm not going to send it to the demonic, what I call demonic, many of them are demonic state schools. They teach everything contrary to the Bible almost completely now. Very bad to society. And it brings on the wrath of God to a nation. When the people allow that, no reason why you should be paying property taxes and sending your kids to a government school. Send them to a private school that's successful and teaches your kids morals and actually gives them an education. But that's what we're doing now. We've in the last 3 years, in my situation, I've been battling greatly with getting 1983s to progress. The courts have been blocking them, but recently the Lord has brought people into my life, high-level, high-knowledgeable people that are showing the remedy. Now, fortunately, the Constitution and the written laws of old actually give us remedy for these problems that we're having now, because there's nothing new under the sun. This stuff's been going on for thousands of years. And we can bring this in front of fortunately in America, when you bring it in front of 12 people, you got seven of them, they're level-headed. I mean, the rest of them might be nuts, but if you can convince seven of them, you just won your case. And if you present the case properly, they can seven of them will turn to the judge and say, the corrupt judge, and say, we're going to rule in favor of the plaintiff that you violated his rights. And make an example of you in front of all America so this doesn't continue anymore. That's why judgments are oftentimes quite a bit higher than the out-of-pocket cost or damage, because they want to make sure that crime doesn't pay. And if a judge steals $1,000 from you and he does it to 10,000 other people during his lifetime, he just stole $10 million from people. So the jury makes an example of him. We stand in front of the jury and we explain to them that if you penalize the federal government $5 million for this behavior, You just took about 3 seconds of their budget. It's no biggie. Don't think it's $5 million is very much to them. So the jury might go back in and say, you know, we got $5 million is nothing. It's a drop in the bucket. So let's up this so that they don't continue this practice. So that's how we can get some big judgments. We had an individual out of Florida that guy that I worked with. He got, it's either $32 or $38 million for a house that they took for $100,000. It was a $100,000 tax. A $100,000 house that they took for property taxes. And he was able to go back in 5 years later and show that there was no evidence that he owed any property taxes, because it was all bluff. And I have a house now in the Midwest that they're trying to take for taxes. And I let it go that way so I can show them up in court. So that's what we do. Who in the government believes that taxes, that house is taxable as a matter of law? And now that we understand how to bring criminal charges against the judges, it makes them straighten up. You got to keep at this. You got to you got to keep stinging them so that, I mean, when we get a judgment against a federal judge, every federal judge in the nation knows about it within a couple of days, because they know that they're out there on thin ice all the time, and they want to know when it starts breaking. So they notify. We have people that work for these judges, and they notify us when our memos come in of our cases. It's pretty interesting. Within hours, some of these people call us and say, "Hey, your case just traveled across the nation. It's laying on my desk right now. I'm supposed to give it to my boss, the federal judge." It's pretty exciting. Michael, you got any questions coming up?
Well, I want to make a statement. But before I do, I just have a bit of housekeeping. We've got a caller from Chicago, Illinois, first-time caller. I want to welcome you. Your phone number ends in 8434. May I have just your first name only, please? That's you. What's your first name, please? Well, that's too bad. All right. The reason why is because I do this thing on every call where when I have first-time callers and you've listened to the disclaimer, I can move more quickly when I have everybody that's already on the call having heard the disclaimer. So you're a first-time caller, you've heard the disclaimer, and I've got no way to prove that now unless you just share. I don't care if you make up a name. Just whoever has the number ending in 8434. From Illinois. 34. All right. Anyways, this is what I wanted to share with you, PJ. And I want to preface all of this by saying, I don't know what I'm talking about. I've been observing this for nearly 30 years. I've been on countless, I mean, tens of thousands in those 30 years. Phone calls, auditing them as I put student and teacher together, listening to the questions and the answers go back and forth. But there's also things that I know in human nature. You know, we talk about Thanksgiving that we just had last week. And, you know, everybody talks about, you know, how the pilgrims were grateful to the Indians and they had their harvest feast, they survived the cold winter, blah, blah, blah. You know what was really at play? The pilgrims had long rifles. Now, I don't know if you realize it, but a long rifle at 100 yards, zeroed in, even without rifling, can be devastating and a lot very accurate. And they would take objects that, like large gourds, you know, we call them pumpkins and things like that, and they'd set them out there, and they would true their shots in, and they would, you know, let the Indians see for the first time this, quote, fire stick, end quote. And then the Indians would see the devastation to the skull, excuse me, not the skull, the pumpkin, what it did to that pumpkin as though it were somebody's head. And they would realize that even though this was about having a good time possibly and having a party, the pilgrims were also clearly demonstrating to the Indians their superiority. Should war come about. And so likewise, and this is why I'm bringing this up, when you go to court, I think that you should notice the court right off the bat, some basic things. Your Honor, if you've got a ruling that we don't understand or agree with, whatever, we want findings of facts and conclusions of law. Your Honor, if your behavior is estranged from the Constitution, and then those things that I had quoted that PJ liked, they would be in there. I want that judge to know those things. I want the prosecutor to know. I'd be filing in the Black's Law Dictionary, sixth edition, the terms United States, what it means, because what United States is also an adjective when you put citizen after it. That there's three definitions, and it also, you know, talk about the land jurisdiction. I would put all of that paperwork in front and let that court know. In fact, I'd even go so far as to have a little thing on Article 7 courts. about how these common law courts can devastate any civil court. I'd have all of that in place first. I'd be showing it to them, letting them know where I was going with this. And then when we finally do get in front of a judge, whether it's pleading, you know, innocent, guilty, nolle contendere, whatever, I wouldn't fall for their games. I'd be going immediately, Your Honor, why am I making a plea when we haven't yet established the jurisdiction of the land of the person? And I wouldn't get off of it. And when they started saying things, and PJ has brought this up about, well, do you live in XYZ County? Your Honor, I have no evidence that I live in XYZ County. Does the prosecutor? They're the ones that are establishing jurisdiction. I'm here almost involuntarily. So let's go. Anyways, I just wanted to share that premise. Allegory, the pilgrims using their fire sticks in front of these Indians, letting them see the kind of devastation that happens. I want the judge to see what's coming down the pike at him as well, so the prosecutor. Back to you, PJ.
Yeah, I believe that over time that we will have the common law courts operating and that they'll be greatly feared and respected by the statutory courts, because right now the statutory courts, with their twisting of words, they've done away with the Bill of Rights, where we have the right to a common law court proceeding. The only time we don't have a right to common law court proceeding is when we did, said, or signed something to be moved to the statutory court. If you go on government land intentionally and do something, yeah, you're going to be in their statutory court. If you'd entered into a contract for services that they rendered and then they're coming after you for a violation of that contract, yeah, you're going to be in their court because that's part of the contract. Now, if the contract is not fully disclosed and so forth, you can bring it back into the common law court and get the common law determination there and strive for it. But they might say, no, it's clear enough. You need to get back there and fulfill your obligation to that contract. But in these areas, we're just being kidnapped and raped and robbed and left for dead. We need to be taking these criminals into common law courts. The interesting thing is, you know, I've been in court hundreds of times, hundreds. Just can't even count them. And there's been a couple judges that actually got really honest and allowed the territorial jurisdiction and the personal jurisdiction challenge to come forward. And guess what? They were quickly removed from their office because the other judges made up stories about them and removed them from office. It's just disgusting. So, and all these other judges know that. And if you go against the good old boys are going to go against you. And it's... But anyway, that's what everybody needs to do the right thing here. It doesn't make if you strived all your life to become a district judge or a federal judge, you strived all your life to get that position. Your greatest duty is to do the right thing before God. You're not there to serve the court. You're not there to serve the plaintiff or the defendant or bar association. You're there to serve God. If you fail to do that, it's not good. It's a universal. I don't know what words you. It's as bad as you can get. So as far as these cases that we're bringing forward and the issues that a lot of our clients have, we're pushing them into the 1983 cases. Most often we're getting illegal responses from the judges in our cases, and now we're using remedies of filing criminal complaints against the judges, and asking for, we're not only filing criminal complaints, we're asking for grand jury indictments. So, and if the prosecutor doesn't want to go put it in front of the jury for grand jury indictments, I think we can also bring the prosecutor into before the grand jury. and let the grand jury take a look at the prosecutor if he's hiding things up. Very, very exciting times. This country is built on some pretty darn good laws, as Michael read when we started here. And we just need to be reminded of those laws. I've been in this thing for 25, 30 years. And, Michael, a third of those cases are all new to me. I just was like, wow, this is good stuff. So that's where we're at. We should have some good questions out there, Michael. Come on.
Sure. Press star 2 on your keypad, ladies and gentlemen, to raise your hand. Press star 2 on your keyboard to raise your hands. And I will unmute your phone, and you can just talk freely with PJ. For those of you on Freedoms Radio, simply see the silhouette of a rectangle laying on its side. Left-click into it. Type away your comment or question. On the outside of that rectangle, you'll see a place to put your contact information. And then hit submit. While you're thinking about doing that, Brother Tom has raised his hand. Go ahead, sir. From Eau Claire,
good evening, everybody. How
Wisconsin.
Eau Claire, Wisconsin. Cheesehead. just checking to see if PJ or anybody's got any updates for me.
Nothing that I know of. We got to remember, we got a lot of clients. We had trouble keeping track of them.
Yeah. Why don't Tom call me tomorrow and let me get you in a conference with John and PJ? Okay.
Okay. Okay. That would be absolutely great. Okay. Thank you.
Uh huh. Thank
Bye.
You, sir.
Yeah.
Thank you. Appreciate your calling in. All right. Next, let's see if we got anybody on Freedoms Radio with a hand raised or writing in. Nope. We're going early call tonight. If Miss Jennifer, welcome back.
Oh, howdy doody. I was just wondering if I put on my 1041 or whatever the tax form is, and do I have to like write what how much I've earned and all that, or can I just write please send me that with saying, please send me proof of territorial jurisdiction that I have to pay income tax to you, and just send that? And would I have to sign it or not sign it, or, you know,
well, there's a process that we go through it. We have a package, but you'll have to talk to Michael. We've never really introduced it through the program here, but that doesn't mean we shouldn't be. Working toward that. There's a process you go through to keep the burden of proof on them and to prove that and have a record that you've asked the proper questions in their proper format. They don't have any excuses not to respond to you. For a small fee, we can screen you to see if there is a nexus where you have a legal duty to pay taxes. Some people do have a legal duty to pay taxes. Most people
right.
do not. But that would
okay.
that would have to be a personal call. We'd have to just, screen you. It'd probably take about 15, 30 minutes at the most, I suppose. And then we could generally the question will be, no, we don't see no nexus, and then we can explain to you the steps into noticing certain individuals of your wish to be informed. It's just that simple. But there we have a case right now where the individuals sent in our paperwork for 10 years, and the IRS finally prosecuted him, and the judge would not let any of those 10 years documents get in front of the jury. So we're going after that judge full blast, and I think he's going to regret that we ever came into that courtroom. He's doing it because there's two things that can happen when you ask them, and there's laws where they have to follow when you ask the right questions, and we show them those laws, and they still ignore it. So I mean, this guy, I think he's going to end up losing his federal job. I really do. His position as a federal judge. We talked to some other individuals that are high up in that field, and they said he certainly should. He's just. But the two things I was going to bring up is that you have a right to know if you have a requirement to do something, like fill out a 1040 form. You have a right to know if you owe the government taxes. You have a right to know if you owe the grocery store around the corner money. You know, they're supposed to send you a bill. You have a right to know how did they calculate that. So what were you going to say?
When someone sends that letter, do you have to like send what you figured out that they say they would think that you would owe, or do you not send the money?
You don't send the money until they. We have to figure out what your occupation is, what your status is, what your income is.
What if you get Social Security money, which is from a government entity?
I don't understand that yet. In some situations, they leave our clients completely alone with Social Security. In other situations, they go after they garnish their Social Security. Now, I've been told that Social Security is completely separate. If you paid in for 7 or 12 years, whatever, I can't remember what it was. You're vested. It has nothing to do with the whole system's screwed up. So it's hard for me to explain to you the way it's supposed to work when most of it's screwed up. Now, if you're truly a U.S. citizen and you're required to pay into the Social Security system, it's pretty straightforward. But when you were deceived and you paid in for 20 years. And then you find out you don't have to pay federal taxes. And then how does that come into the play with the Social Security system? Because they always take the bottom number off the 1040 tax form to base your Social Security payment on. And, you know, it all ties together. So it gets kind of weird.
Well, yeah, I get my husband's because he died. And so I just receive a small amount of that. But before, I have only been doing that since 2018. So anyway, I guess I'll talk to Michael about looking into that.
Yeah. Like I said, sometimes they grab it and sometimes they don't. I haven't got it figured out.
Okay. Well, I guess it's worth a try.
Yeah. We have a client that was making $2 million a year, and he got prosecuted, went to jail for 9 years, and he got out. So I wrote the IRS, and I described myself doing the exact same job he did at the exact same location and exact same birth status and all that stuff, everything. And I asked the IRS, am I required to file a 1040 tax form? And they refused to answer me. Yet they prosecuted that guy for not paying taxes. But they refused to answer me. Now, we've been trying to take this into court. And they've been blocking us. And now we're going to go back, and we believe we're going to file criminal charges against the judges that are blocking us. Because we have a right to know if we have a requirement to file a tax with that location, that activity, and for that person. We have a right to know. We are the bosses, not them. We are the bosses. They have a legal, they have an employment duty to tell us. This whole thing has just got flipped on its head. Go ahead. What were you going to say?
Oh, well, hopefully I won't end up in jail, but yeah, I'll just.
No. We've never had a problem. The individual that sent these things in for 10 years, he paid also every year. wasn't supposed to do that. He was supposed to send it in. He was supposed to send it in and then sit tight. But
right.
He got nervous and he went, hey, but he never told us. And then all of a sudden he notices, he notifies us, says, hey, they're prosecuting me. I said, for what? Well, I sent those forms in with my payment every year. And I go, what did you just say? My payment every year. Why did you send your payment in? They're supposed to assess you.
Right.
And he goes, well, you know, I'm married and I just got nervous and da, 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 da. Well, anyway, okay. Well, anyway, they still have to make the legal determination. They have to attest that you have a requirement to file and a requirement to pay, and they refuse to do that. So we got them. And I mean, this is one of the biggest cases in the nation thus far in the IRS arena. So they are really scrambling to save face on this, because some of these cases that we're touching, it could basically force the IRS to stay within its legal boundaries, and it would cut their collection by 2/3 at least.
Right.
Maybe a lot more. Don't know.
Now, you know, I was born in Australia, but I became an American citizen, but they haven't. I was assuming I was becoming a free American citizen, not a corporate American citizen. And does that make any difference? Do you know?
I used to believe that you're stuck with federal taxes and state taxes, but I just don't know. I'm working with a new guy that's got a lot more knowledge on this, and he seems to imply that it's very possible that you may not. When you come into the United States, if you come into the United States and do your employment, yeah, but were you making money in the United States? I mean, did you come in to live in the United States, or did you come in to live in America? And did they disclose that you had that option? I believe
right.
that a foreigner has an option to come into America and not into the United States.
I agree.
To come into one of the several freely associated compact states as opposed to
the
federal states. Yeah.
Exactly.
And that's
if you're going to go into a federal state, you're going to live by the federal rules. But if you come into the free states, it's different, a lot different.
Right.
Exactly. Well, they tricked me, you see, because they didn't tell me the truth. And so as far as I'm concerned,
who gave them authority to stop people from coming into the freely associated states? I mean, who gave them permission to do that? We gave them permission to stop to screen people going into their jurisdiction. Yeah, we gave them that permission because that was military land. But who gave them this authority to stop people from coming into the other land? That's an interesting question. They make it sound like there is no other land. These lawyers, when they graduate from law school, we ask them, we sit them down, we go, how much of the American land is federal land? And they go, all of it. All of it. Mm-hmm. And then we show them a map that shows all the areas that's federal land. And said, did they ever show you this in law school? No. Well, see all the blue here? That's federal land. All the white, that land is not federal land. All the blue is where the federal law operates territorially. All the white is where general jurisdiction operates, which is called common law. Sometimes we call it American common law. They go, well, they never told us this. It's interesting.
All right. All right. Thank you, Jennifer. Thank you, everyone, for joining us this evening. I think it was a great call tonight. PJ, just to let you know, we've doubled our numbers in the last 4 months, just to share with you, just to let you know.
Good. Maybe we'll get to a critical mass here and it'll triple.
Yep. All right. So, Jennifer, thank you for your questions.
Thank you.
Yeah. And we'll talk to everybody soon. Until next week, good night and be well.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.